Chapter 18. Idris. In an eerie echo of the nearby human settlement, the originators had certainly liked their concentric circles when it came to architecture. Or maybe it was something to do with their technology, or something else entirely. Whatever their purpose, those circles were the last remnants of what might have been a city. Maybe. They were visible as striations in the grey, ashy soil of Jericho, where the plant life had been cut back. Or they could be spotted beneath odd swathes of off-colour vegetation. Each circle enclosed a weird mazework of buried foundations. It was as though the whole site was composed of a series of nested labyrinths, each only large enough for a 5-year-old to comfortably navigate. Idris could see where the archaeology team had been working, because a whole slice of the ruins had been exposed. The excavation currently extended down 2 metres, and Idris considered how much further down it might go. The thought of a half mile of cramped subterranean labyrinth lurking beneath them made his insides twist. And yet somehow, he felt it was there. The ruins seemed to be formed of eroded stone. Perhaps the chewing of the elements over countless centuries had given those structures their toothy, irregular texture. Yet the stonework of the exposed lower levels was no smoother. Maybe it's just what the stuff is supposed to look like. By this time, the ground car was winding around the outer circle, careful not to crush any priceless archaeological rubbish. Idris spotted some large dome tents nearby, big ones, with individual chambers podding out from the centre on spokes. They were lit up from within, now the sun was on its way down. The sunken basin, surrounded by tall forest, must mean night came suddenly to the dig site. "What," Chris asked Robellin, "keeps the damn groppelers and the rest from just chowing down on you all?"
"Half our generator power goes into creating big-ass EM static," the biologist told them. "Fucks with our comms, all right, but it's like shouting into the ears of any bastard that wants to come at us."
His grin slipped.
"Still, it's like your mate was saying. Nothing much big does come down there. They don't like it."
"Do the ruins put out their own EM frequencies?"
"That'd be a tidy bloody piece of explanation, wouldn't it? No such luck. We've tested everything, and they're dead. They've been dead for hundreds of thousands of years, conservative estimate. You wouldn't expect them to have left the fucking oven on or something."
Idris stopped listening, because he was looking at the ruins. No, feeling the ruins. He could sense them, in the same way that he could sense the throughways and the nodes of unspace. Something was active there. It was a tugging at the edge of his mind, like someone plucking at his sleeve. There was a metaphysical weight to the whole area. It was baked into the structure. The shape, the weird maze-like arrangements, and the materials that nobody had ever been able to satisfactorily analyse or duplicate.
"Has the site ever had an intermediary here, working on the originator ruins?" he asked.
"An int? Don't think so, mate. Not that I heard, anyway."
Rebellin spread his hands.
"I mean, you fellas are pretty few and thin, right? Not as if there's a bundle of you at the Careers Bureau, wondering what you can do with your time."
Idris fell silent, wondering if he had a duty to tell someone about this. The liaison board, maybe. It would be a cushy job for some of their forced conscript ints to work in archaeology, rather than brave the trauma of unspace travel. But when the leashes were signed, even originator archaeology lost out to interstellar trade, espionage, and military transport. There was probably no point. A handful of people were coming out from the tents to welcome the land car, and they eyed Solace warily.
Probably no nativist hostility out here, but you wouldn't expect to find a battle-ready Partheni soldier on Jericho. Then the staff began unloading the car and hauling crates away, and Idris saw what must be Trine, limping out to greet them. The Trine of his memory had been shiny and new, instanced into a frame that was broadly humanoid, faceless, and just about identical to their hive-built siblings. Back in the war, this had been standard for hivers, who interacted with humans. Once they were free to quit Hugh and humanity, hivers had started diversifying. This Trine's frame had two legs, thin and jointed like a bird's, and their torso was a barrel shape above a box pelvis, opening onto a whole cutlery drawer of folding limbs. Trine's head was a silvery bowl, containing a projected face. It was human, androgynous, middle-aged and cheery-looking, and a trick of the projection made it appear to be looking straight at you, no matter what angle you were at. The other thing Idris noticed about Trine's frame was how old and battered it was. Any polish was most definitely gone, and the metal body was covered in dents and spot repairs, off-colour panels cannibalised from other machinery. One leg was slightly shorter than the other. Only that array of arms had been kept polished and perfect.
Subtlety was never the Parthenon's strong point.
The precise, amused-sounding voice issued from somewhere within Trine's torso.
Myrmidon executor solis, as I live and fail to breathe. No Partheni task force behind you, about to take possession of the Gold City dig site?
Everyone could hear his comments, and Trine received a number of awkward looks from their colleagues.
This is purely for self-defence, delegate.
Solis also raised her voice, to confirm to the camp that she wasn't a one-woman invasion. Mr. Punch currently rested on one shoulder, muzzle only threatening the first faint stars.
And that seems a necessity on this planet of yours. Oh, yes.
Idris had never heard a hiver snicker before, but Trine had apparently felt it necessary to install the facility.
Our neighbours. About our new friends,
Yon Rebellin broke in, coming back for another crate.
Your fella here, the skinny one, he's a surprising fucker. Groppler Wrangler. May just have opened up a whole bloody can of research on us. Tell you about it when we've got stuff put away.
The hiver's attention now focused on Idris.
Manir Idris Telemie?
The statement trailed off questioningly. They might not think like humans, but as a product of human technology, hivers were good at putting on a nuanced show.
None other,
Idris confirmed weakly, knowing that Trine would be performing a compare and contrast with the young intermediary they'd known during the war, and finding far too few differences.
Long story.
Evidently, Trine agreed. But now, let us step over here and speak of matters utterly innocent and unconnected with subterfuge.
They took several canted steps towards the perimeter, beckoning with some of their arms.
You mentioned subtlety, Solis pointed out,
when they put 10 metres or so between them and the ground car.
Well, you did rather push that ship out and burn it,
Trine remarked tartly.
When is your ship due, may I ask?
Solis exchanged a glance with Idris. It isn't. The EM interference, they said we couldn't fly because of it.
You said you had a ship,
Trine pressed, their ghostly face tight-lipped and disapproving.
I specifically inquired as to whether you had a ship. You equally specifically confirmed that yes, a ship was what you had.
We do have a ship. In orbit,
Idris put in.
I am not sure why you imagine that would be of any immediate use, Menhir Telemie,
Trine told him sharply.
Solis, my dear, my love, friend of my youth, etc. Did you not consider that when I was asking about your ship? I meant that I might have need of one.
Trine, Solis said, with obvious patience, what's going on? Idris could almost read her mind. Have they gone crazy? After all, nobody knew how long a hiver could stay separate and instanced without rejoining the whole.
I have had two attempts on my life, these being the specific circumstances to which I am alluding,
Trine said shortly. The holographic face made a big show of looking suspiciously left and right.
I don't know what you saw in Anchortown, but the politics there have taken a very marked downturn in the last year.
Nativist recruiting drive, Solis agreed. We saw some of it. Trine made a dismissive sound.
Oh, it has always been thus, my good dear friend of my heart. But nativists are an empty hand. All they can do is a little light slapping. I refer to those hands that carry a knife. You know the ones, dear heart?
The betrayed, Idris asked. I mean, they've got enough people to hate without bringing archaeology into it, haven't they?
You'd think, but no, Trine insisted. According to them, of course, regular humans could have won the war. But then Ints came along and made contact with the architects and made some nefarious deal with them, plus a bunch of aliens and the Partheni. The usual suspects.
Trine's chest arms waved about in mockery.
But even the betrayed can't get round the fact that alien artifacts saved millions, because architects won't touch originator sites with a long pole from orbit. As a result, the betrayed are starting to claim that originators were the Ur-humans, mankind's mystical space parents, or some such ridiculous supposition. They also claim that various traitor factions are even now pillaging originator sites and selling everything to the aliens, the hegemony, or whoever. There's no originator site bigger than this one, so the betrayed have been trickling into Jericho for a year at least. They hold the sincere belief that we, at the dig, are all traitors in need of a good knifing. And I, my dear, am both the sole non-human academic here and the highest profile originator expert. Or, as we call it here, I'm a target. We found a bomb in a crate of instruments I'd ordered. Someone spotted the tampering, thankfully. And a few months ago, someone came to our camp and shot my leg off, which was inconvenient.
Why are you still here then? Solis demanded.
Because, my good old former boon companion Myrmidon Executor Solis didn't bring her ship with her,
Trine hissed.
Look you, my dear, I can't just leave. I'm not going to walk through the streets of Anchortown alone or jump into an elevator car with who knows what company. Which was why, my old comrade in arms, I rather hoped you were bringing your ship.
They said you couldn't fly out here. Solis almost shouted at them.
Well, you almost can't, Trine snapped right back. But if you time it right, you just about can, if you have a very good pilot.
We have a very good pilot, Solis insisted, then grimaced. Who's here with me and not on our ship?
Well, Trine said, with all apologies to your doubtless excellent piloting skills, Menia Telemier, that's not a great deal of use, is it?
Can we raise Ollie? Idris put in. What are your comms here?
As of now, zero. They've put the night screen up to keep out the gropplers, Trine explained. Once the sun's up, we can negotiate for a gap in the EM noise to try and get a signal out. We'll have to route it to the transmitter station at Anchortown. They can send it up the cable to your vessel. It's an inexact science. You'd think they'd just put in a focused beam signaller or something, Solis said. Blink tight light from Anchortown to here. I mean, it doesn't have to be a radio. Oh, they tried. Just because we're not Partheni doesn't mean we're completely impractical, Trine said. Originator ruins do something to the light, my dear. Something interferes with the signal. Most of my colleagues said what they received was hopelessly corrupted, devoid of information.
What did the rest say? Idris asked automatically, suspecting correctly that he wouldn't like the answer.
That a message did get through, it just wasn't the one we'd sent. We got through a beam receiver a month. The nightmares, you know.
Trine's face waggled its eyebrows alarmingly, wide-eyed, and Idris decided he could have done without that. As Idris didn't sleep, he found himself on his own once the camp had settled in for the night. Without the others distracting him, he couldn't blot out the sensation anymore. He'd felt it the moment they came in sight of the ruins, perhaps even since he set foot on world. There was a presence to the originator site. It wasn't dead, though surely it had once been something far grander and was now just a worn-down stub. Whatever had made this place what it was, whatever struck fear into the architects, it was still here. The silence he felt was the silence of something standing close, making no sound, not simply an absence of sound. And nobody knows this, except me. Perhaps there was a whole covert research program on the subject, run out of Mordant House. But he thought not. There weren't enough ints, not enough originator sites, nobody to join the dots. Except him. He felt as though he was on the edge of a colossal revelation, wondrous or terrible, he couldn't say. And because no more understanding came, he just stayed on that edge. An exhaustion of suspense kept him strung out for hours, while dark turned back into dawn and then headed towards dark again. The camp, he discovered, worked for one day-night cycle and then rested for the next one. It wasn't something that fitted well with human diurnal rhythms, but since Idris had shed those, maybe he was better suited to Jericho than anyone else.
Basically, unless it's an emergency, we put the EM down for an hour every 2 days, so's people can call their loved ones, or their pimps and bookies, Rebellin explained. Also, we need to upload and download the science, you know, order supplies, get the news medios, all that. So it's usually chocker, is what I'm saying. You're getting a channel for your pilot. Whether you can dodge the interference or not, wouldn't normally happen.
Is that right? Solis said. The tilt of her jaw suggested that Mr. Punch might have something to say about that.
Except obviously we know Trine's in a spot, and this is for him. And also...
The biologist shot a sly look Idris's way.
Your mate here, he's made a discovery. Something we never guessed was even there to be discovered, eh? Shows what a shower of fucking amateurs we are. Give us another bout of free and frank with him, then when we take the generators offline, you get first go on the transmitter. Deal?
Idris? And at least she was asking, not ordering.
I don't know what I can tell you, Idris said to Rebellin. But sure.
Then Rebellin gathered an audience of geologists, biologists,
and Trine's dig team, and his interrogation began. They asked him all manner of questions about his int senses, how he reacted to the originator site, and on and on. True to his predictions, he had precious little he could tell them. The same odd guesses and failures of description getting hopelessly mangled between mind and mouth.
"Look," he explained at last, "it's what being an int is, see? There's a place you feel and you go to, in here,"
poking himself hard in the side of the head.
"Saint Xavian was born like this, and they made the rest of us like her, as best they could."
Seeing too many blank looks on young faces, he snapped out,
"Surgery and implants and chemotherapy, and most of the time it kills you, you understand? We're not meant to happen. You wreck people's brains, trying to make something like me."
Seeing their flinches or disapproving expressions and thinking,
"How is it you don't even know this? Kids, they're just kids." There was a war on, so of course they'd try anything.
He reined himself in before he started going all crazy old man on them.
"Those of us that lived, there's this sense we have here inside. It lets us do what we do in unspace. But most of all, it lets us talk to architects, right? To say, hey, we're here. Stop doing that. You're..."
He let out a little laugh that sounded dangerously hysterical, even to him.
"You're killing us. Stop killing us, basically."
Staring out bleakly at their uncomfortable faces.
"These ruins you've got here, they're speaking into that same space. And your grapplers and things, they hear it too. So yes, I can hear this place doing its thing, just by being here. That's what the architects hear too, I guess, when they come to these places. But I don't know why I'm hearing this. Nobody knows why. If we did, we wouldn't have to kill so many people to make a freak like me."
He could tell they were disappointed, and it made him ashamed to be so useless, so ignorant of his own workings. Then Rebellin was there, putting a hand on his shoulder. Not a spacer's usual quick tug for attention, but an attempt to give comfort. "It's okay, mate," the man said. And Idris realised he'd been shivering like a hypothermic. "Fuck me, I just thought ints went through a secret training thing or..."
"I'm sorry."
Idris actually sniffled, like a child who couldn't do his homework.
"I wish I could tell you more about it."
"Look, it's good. Just the idea that the site works that bloody way at all, mate," Rebellin said. "I'll make sure you get your comms time." Idris just felt more wretched with every word, as though the comms was a consolation prize, a trophy for turning up, no matter how dismally he'd performed. Desperately, he burst out,
"If it's any use, I can show you where the other ruins are."
There was a loaded silence, and then one of the archaeologists asked, "You can... what now?"
"The rest of the ruins. Unless you found them, but just haven't got to them yet."
"Menhir Telemier, my old acquaintance, what precisely are you offering to impart?"
Trine asked, stalking over.
"Only when I met the Groppler, there was a moment," Idris went on awkwardly, "I just felt like a radar pulse went out from us. It sent a wave across the planet, and pings came back, mapping out, for example, there's a long avenue that way."
He pointed, knowing the direction without needing to think.
"And there's another place at the end of it. Must be 119 clicks that way. And look, is there a map? A satellite map?"
An hour later, and he'd drawn what he thought might be out there.
If they could get a geophysics scanner working, or even manage a flight over the jungle, then they'd see the truth of it. And he still couldn't say how he knew it. In the intermediary programs labs, they'd used every damn instrument invented to search for how the information flowed from the universe into their heads. Nothing had worked. What they did was happening on some unknowable other level, just like Unspace. After this revelation, the dig staff told Solace she could take as much time as she wanted on their comms channel, and she set about hailing Ollie up on the Vulture God. For the first 15 minutes, she was just shouting into the staticky void, frustrating for her, but downright chilling to Idris. Because, sitting at her feet in the comms tent, he felt like he could hear the whole planet listening, breathing down the open channel. The EM interference that was screwing with their transmissions was just the visible portion of a shifting buzz of chatter. The cacophony tugged at the edges of his mind, the local life exploiting the channels open to it by the originator presence. He wondered about the uniquely plastic form of life that had been evolving around these ruins for millions of years, supremely able to exploit its environment. Jerrican biology might be more unique than even Rebellin had thought. It might be the only known biosphere that had developed to exploit Unspace on a local level.
Let me help.
He pulled himself to his feet, and Solace moved away from the transmitter, annoyed by her failure. He skimmed the frequencies, trying to ride a conflicting tide of EM babble from the jungle, tree shouting over tree, monster over monster, tiny bugs screaming at each other, and a trillion other calls. There was a path through it, he knew, though it kept shifting. Solace had to fumble for it blindfold. But if he just let his hands do their thing on the transmitter, without his conscious mind intruding,
Anchortown to Gold City, receiving, over.
It was the distorted voice of the transmitter operator, tiny and far away. Solace lunged in to speak, as Idris did his best to keep the connection open. She almost asked that they be put up the wire to the Vulture God, before remembering their Jenny Kite alias. A few touch-and-go moments later, and they had Ollie's voice on a slight delay.
About time, the drone specialist snapped the moment she had them. What the fuck are you doing down there?
There was more, but she cut out for a moment before Idris retrieved her.
Jenny Kite, we have Trine but need evac. Over,
Solace said, as clearly and carefully as she could.
Yeah, you sure do, came Ollie's static mushed voice. Look, guess who Kit and I found docked right here? Remember the Raptorid? Belongs to that Magdan bastard who got Idris and the captain arrested.
Yes,
he's here, on planet, Solace broke in.
The interruption resulted in them losing the link for 5 whole minutes. Then they heard Anchortown Station's tremulous tones again and were patched back through.
Look, you're not the only one who can do spy stuff, Patho,
Ollie asserted belligerently, apparently as part of a tirade that had been going on for some time. Solace was gritting her teeth.
Gold City to Jenny Kite, repeat, over. Repeat what? Would you stop with the...
And they lost Ollie for another moment. Solace kept on patiently asking her to repeat until her voice phased back in.
I said that Kit hacked the Raptorid's comms. All that shit on planet means Ascaro's not using encryption.
Ollie, we are losing you every few seconds. What do we need to know? Over?
Oh. Right.
Idris pictured the specialist swallowing her annoyance.
Did you get the bit where I said they were coming for you?
No, said Solace with some restraint. No,
I did not. They think you're here to grab this train character, Ollie said, static rising and falling behind her voice, like surf on a shore. They think you're stealing originator secrets or some damn thing. We're waiting in town for the Hiver to come to them, but you taking off for the dig kicked them into gear, and they're on their way after you. Maybe 20 hours behind you.
Solis blinked, and Idris could see her doing the maths. He reckoned that meant any time now, if Ascaro's people had commandeered the same type of transport.
Ollie, we need evac, over. We need to get out of here with Trine.
Solis met Idris's look. They both knew that wasn't likely to happen, given local atmospheric conditions. Ollie apparently had a different take on things.
Well, obviously, she said sharply. Been working on it since I knew you were in the shit. Sit tight. I will be with you as soon as I've finished refitting the Jones shielding.
Wait, what do you...
Seriously? The longer we're jawing here, the less time I'm spending saving your ass, patho girl.
And then Ollie had cut the line, leaving Solis staring angrily at nothing. The pair of them bundled outside and grabbed Chris.
We're getting company, she announced to Trine, Rebellin and the dig staff. Armed nativists from Anchortown, coming for Trine.
Everyone stared at her, Chris included.
We're going to need a defensive perimeter, she said. Just as well the jungle's just stubble close to the dig or...
Solis, mate, Rebellin put in awkwardly. We're... You do understand we're not soldiers, right?
She blinked at him.
You're serious about this? There's a squad of bloody gunmen on their way, he pressed.
So I'm told. They've tried to kill Trine before, right?
Idris looked from face to ashen face.
Solis, he said hollowly, we can't stay here.
It's not the most defensible position, she agreed, not quite understanding his point. But this is where Ollie will come looking for us.
If we stay here, people are going to get hurt. It's not their fight. We've just screwed them over by turning up.
Not entirely true, mate, Rebellin said. I mean, Trine's one of ours, right? And they'd have come sooner or later, I reckon. But beanbag shooters aren't going to be a whole lot of fucking good if these clowns have real guns.
They will.
Solis stood very still, and Idris imagined her mind working like a military machine, breaking down the problem. How much weight did the Parthenon give to civilian lives exactly? Colonial civilian lives at that.
I hear vehicles, someone called, voice twisted in panic. They're coming!
Chris, Idris, Trine, Solis said, with me. We're going to head up the trail and then into the jungle. We'll break their advance and then fall back. We'll hope to lose them in the trees and circle back in time to meet the Joan, if Ollie can get it down here. Compris?
They nodded, although Idris felt it was anything but compris. As plans went, it was a series of unknowns tied together with string. These guys, they're likely Voyeni, house guards for a Magdan Boyarin, Chris told Rebellin. They'll be all very pushy, arrogant. Probably won't just go mad with bloodlust, though. So give way and tug your forelocks. It's us thereafter.
With luck, they'll just leave you alone, the Partheni added. I'm sorry. That's all I can give you.